The Bhagavatam, the entire Bhagavatam is based on, it's a dialogue, or basically a dialogue between two exalted personalities, Srila Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. We all know the pastime, the story of how Maharaj Parikshit was cursed for something seemingly insignificant, and the curse was extreme, that he would have to die within 7 days. This occurs in the very part of the last part of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. And then, after that, Maharaj Parikshit, who is the king, the emperor rather, Samrat, he's the emperor of the world, he renounces everything, because after all, he's going to die in 7 days. And his question was, what should I do during the remaining part of my life? It's so short. What should I do? How should I engage my time? How should I engage my consciousness? Now he himself, because he is a great devotee, he himself answers the question. When the sages gather around him by the bank of the Yamuna, he had decided to fast, to not eat for 7 days, not sleep for 7 days. He would not drink water for 7 days. He wanted to simply focus his consciousness in preparation for his death. So he told the sages, when he welcomed them, he told the sages that, please, just let me hear about the Supreme Lord. Pour the nectar of Krishna Katha, Vishnu Katha, into my ears, because in that way, through the ears, these spiritual topics enter the heart. This is the methodology of getting to the heart. Through the ears, yam yam diyatar urugaya vibhavyanti tam tam pranayeshe saranugrahaya. By his mercy, anugrahaya, Krishna enters the heart through the ears, through the channel of the ears. But yet, although Maharaj Parikshit knew the answer to his question, how should I spend the remaining days of my life, the hourglass of my life, is the sand is pouring through moment by moment. Still he asked all those who are present, all the sages who are present, to please answer this question for him. And as it happens with sages, astrologers, and doctors, they couldn't agree. They started basically, well, I think this, and I think this, and I think this, and I think this, and I think, and politicians. But at that point, one special sage entered, and his name was Sukadeva Goswami. And when he entered, everyone stood up in reverence, and they offered him the seat of honor, and it was he who was going to answer the question, and it was he who was going to speak in reply to that question. So that brings us basically to the end of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, and then in the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami begins to speak. Prior to that, in the first canto, it is Sutta Goswami, and in the 12th canto, in the second half of the 12th canto, it is also Sutta Goswami who is narrating this powerful event to great sages who had gathered to remove the ills of Kali Yuga, which are the age of quarrel, fills everyone's consciousness with such disturbance. So how to remove the difficulties of Kali Yuga? Manda sumanda matayo manda abhagya upadrutaha. It is so difficult. And everyone is basically lame, crippled in Kali Yuga. It is so difficult. So Sukadev begins to answer the question, what is the duty of one who is about to die? And what is the duty of every man in every circumstance? And he begins answering it, and his actual answer comes in the 11th verse of the second canto. First of all, he glorifies the question itself. The question itself is glorious. Who in this world is asking such a question nowadays? How should I spend my life? How should I fill my consciousness so that at the time of my departure from this world, when the soul leaves the body, my death, how should I spend my time so my next destination is best? How, in other words, how should I practically best use my life? And how we use our life is tested at the time of death. So he glorifies, Sukadeva first glorifies the question, that this is the kind of question that those who are transcendentalists answer. What's the opposite of a transcendentalist? I heard many answers sort of like, yes, that's what I was thinking, materialist. That's what everyone said, I'm sure. And actually, the German philosopher Feuerbach, who was somewhere in the middle of the 19th century, he defined what a materialist was, and he said, I am a materialist. He says that I accept as reality what I can see, nothing beyond that, and perhaps what I can infer, logically deduce from what I see. So that's what a materialist is. A transcendentalist sees with different eyes, with different vision. Because we don't actually see with our eyes. We see with the concepts that happen to inhabit our particular mind. We reinterpret reality by what's in our mind, not by what happens in the retina to the different. Do they have pixels in the eyes like on a computer screen? I think there's something. Yeah, it's called pixels too. Maybe they were named after computers, perhaps. But maybe it could have been the other way around. So he glorifies the question because the transcendentalist sees with purified consciousness, because we see differently according to the level of our consciousness. A termite or a white ant, as they are sometimes called, when they look at wood, they see the wood completely differently than a carpenter sees the wood, or a person who is taking that wood in the form of a table and placing a book on it. They will see it differently. And in different times of the day, according to our mood, we see differently. So what we want to do, the basic processes of Krishna consciousness, is to make the consciousness very purified, very rarefied, and remove everything that is gross from the consciousness as much as we practically can, so our perception of existence, of reality, is most accurate. Purified consciousness. And the basic lifestyle that we follow, where everyone will be acknowledging the rules of, who are taking initiation of the no meeting, no meat. Sometimes the devotees have so many meetings, they add that fifth one, no more meetings. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. These aren't in and of themselves spiritual, but they are meant to purify the consciousness, make it finer and more subtle, so that we can perceive reality accurately. Because when our consciousness is gross and deeply covered by ignorance, then the perception of reality is so gross and crude that we can shoot a person and it doesn't even disturb us. The practice for shooting a person is killing the animals. It doesn't disturb us to see the suffering of another. So purified consciousness is required, and therefore this was the basis of the question. And then he explains that those who are materialists, they have many, many subjects to hear, many things interest them. And then how most people in this world, materialists, are just spent with their days filled with thinking of how to accumulate money, and their night in the family dealings. And they have no idea of spiritual knowledge, and they have no idea of how to deeply solve the problems of life at their root, at their core. And even though they experience continuously the miseries of material so-called reality, they don't inquire deeper. This is what it means to be a materialist. I don't inquire deeply. Continuing, he says, Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Hari Sotavya Kirtatavyas Cha Smotavyas Chaschitebram. If you want to be fearless at the most fearful time, the time of death, most fearless, where the body is, the consciousness is so disturbed, it's difficult to breathe, there's so much pain, the heart is malfunctioning, the lungs, etc., etc., and that causes such turbulence in the consciousness. If one wants to be abhayam, free from fear, then one must, in one's life, tasma, therefore, one must hear and glorify and pray to and remember Bhagavan, the Lord who possesses all opulences, Ishvara, the supreme controller, Hari. Hari has many meanings, but he, one of the meanings is he who takes away all that we value materially in life. At the time of death, he will take it away, and it also means he steals away the mind of those who place their consciousness upon him. He is the greatest thief. He is so attractive, so with his attractiveness, he steals away the mind. So we should hear about and glorify and remember him. And that the highest perfection of life is indeed to remember him, to focus the consciousness upon him at the most difficult time of death. And then he explains that he himself had studied this book, the Bhagavatam, and even though he was already situated in transcendence, he was also already spiritually situated, still the content of the Bhagavatam was so attractive to him, because it specifically describes Krishna, to realize Krishna, one need not only to be pure, free from impurities, but it also means to have love for him. This is the additional requirement, not only purity, but actually loving him in a specific mood causes him to reveal the Supreme Lord to reveal the most intimate parts about himself to the devotee, in the same way that we just don't tell everyone everything about us. We tell someone our name, and then if we get to know them, and if the more we trust someone, then we We tell more secret and intimate parts of ourselves. Well, we are like that because the Supreme Lord is like that. And it's completely natural. Because why do we wait to tell everyone the deepest secrets? It's because we trust them. Because the relationship is deep, and therefore we trust them. The relationship is deep, and there's an exchange of love, and therefore we trust them. And then we tell. So where there is love, there is trust, and when there is trust, there is intimacy, and when there is intimacy, there is a revealing, and the word for revealing is revelation. So when the religious person is so intimately united with the Supreme Lord in love, that he is so trustworthy, then revelation comes. Then there is a descending revealing of the mystical truths, which means the aspects, the unseen by materialists, aspects of the absolute truth of the Supreme Lord. Then revelation comes. So he said that even though I was already in transcendence, still I was attracted by this special message of Bhagavatam, which talks specifically about Krishna. And now he says, I will recite this Bhagavatam to you. And one who gives full attention and respect to hearing the Bhagavatam achieves unflinching faith in the Lord, who gives salvation, who gives liberation from material life, who, srupena avastati, who causes us to be situated in our actual natural position. Our current situation is quite unnatural, because here we are, each and every one of us feel that we will never die, that we will live forever, because we will never die. We will live forever. But not in the material body. So Krishna gives, he is the giver of liberation, freedom from the body, the snare, the trap of full body identification of myself. If this was me, this was me, but it's obviously not me, because if I'm my body, which body am I? The one that was 2 years old, or the one that was 7 years old, or the one that was 20 years old, or 30, or 40, or 50, or 60? Which body am I if I am and was my body? So, Krishna gives liberation, but the Bhagavatam, through the Bhagavatam, he gives more than liberation. Liberation is a concept that's dear to a prisoner. He's thinking, when will my emancipation, my freedom come from prison? And he's writing on the wall, so many days and how many do I have left? But then the issue is, the real issue is, what are the activities of a free person, a liberated person? A person who is no longer enshackled in material existence. What does he do? That, no one will say. No one can say it. Does he just sit around and listen to harp music all day long? That's more a Christian. I don't know. I don't know what the Jewish people think they do in up there. On the second floor, or the seventh floor, or whatever it is up there. Anyway, no one. You become nothing, or everything, or something. But the Bhagavatam will teach the life of a free soul, a soul who's alive in his spiritual relationship with Krishna. That's what the Bhagavatam teaches. And the meaning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which means consciousness. So what is the life of the soul the conscious soul. Now we're watching, and we see what life means for someone in a body. We see it with ourselves, we see it with each other, we see it with animals, we see it with birds and insects. But what is the life of the soul who is free from a material body? That is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, and that's what the Bhagavatam teaches. So then comes this verse, which many of our teachers say is the direct answer to the question that Maharaj Prickett asked, and that was, what to do? Here I am, I have 7 days to live, and what should I do during that time? What actually should I focus my consciousness on? And here's the answer. Please repeat after me. Etanna vidyamananam.
Etanna vidyamananam.
Those who are completely free of material desires, ichatam akutobayam,
ichatam akutobayam,
or if you're not on that level, if you are full of material desires, but yet akutobayam, wish to get free from doubts and fears. Third line. Yoginam nripa nirnitam.
Yoginam nripa nirnitam.
Or if you are a self-satisfied, completely fixed in the self and already satisfied, not interested in material achievements, but if you have so much satisfaction within you, are that kind of a yogi. So either you're one who is free from material desires, or one who is full of material desires, or you're a yogi who is self-satisfied. Nripa, O king, because he's speaking to the king, near nirnitam, it has been decided, it's already concluded, that the answer to your question, regardless of what your situation is of consciousness, whether you're full of desires, have no desires, are self-satisfied, the answer to your question of what to do is the same for all classes of person, and that is Hari Nama Anukirtanam.
Hari Nama Anukirtanam.
That means chanting the holy names and glorifying Krishna. Harinam Anukirtanam. This is the way that follows the authorities, the great authorities. So here is Srila Prabhupada's translation. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord, after the ways of great authorities, using the methodologies that they have established. Do you need a seat? I'll say okay, a constant series of minor adjustments. So, O King, the constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, for everyone, including those who are free from all material desires, including those who are desirous of material enjoyment, and also including those who are self-satisfied by dint of their already established transcendental knowledge. The same process will deliver the highest result to everyone. And in every religious tradition, the same principle is spoken of. Here it is emphasized so deeply. This is the process. Chant the names of Krishna. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra. So, in Prabhupada's purport to this verse, he explains the methodologies of chanting. How to chant, because there was that line, chanting following the ways of the great authorities. So there are ways to chant that one decides, well, I'm going to do it this way, that everyone should, as they're chanting, they should eat ice cream and stand on their heads at the same time. This is my way, and everyone has their own way. But no, there are authorized ways to chant, because it is walking in the footsteps of those who have already traversed the path successfully. So that's what we mean by following in the ways of the great authorities, the great acharyas, the great teachers, is because they have crossed this rocky, difficult road of life, of being in a being a soul, an eternal soul in a temporary, always shifting situation. They have crossed this path. They have succeeded in crossing the ocean of birth and death. So it is recommended, therefore, to follow their footsteps. So, first there is an introduction to the point, and then there is an explanation of what we in ISKCON traditionally speak about during initiation lectures, and that is on how to chant properly by avoiding the 10 offenses against the Holy Name. And when we talk about aparad, or offenses against the Holy Name, the easiest way to understand this aparad or offenses, say, have you in your life ever been offended by anyone?
So?
Huh? So many times. What does it mean, being offended by someone?
Doesn't treat us the way we deserve it.
Yes. And what is the response of an individual to being offended? How do you feel when you're offended?
Hurt.
Insulted, hurt, like that. And how do you deal with the person who has offended you? Or, well, you don't want to deal with him, basically. And if you're a wealthy person who is generously bestowing billions of shekels upon everyone, and then someone offends you, oh, how will you react to that person? Well, you're our spokesman over here, God. How will you react to that person?
Withdraw all my money.
Yes. Well, why should I give it to you? You don't value the gift. Well, what to speak of the person who's giving the gift. So come back when you affect some changes of heart, then we'll be happy to give it to you. So while we are chanting, we want to learn how to avoid the offenses against the Holy Name, because they cause the Holy Name, Nama Prabhu, to withdraw the moonshine of their benedictory cooling kindness. So there is methodology in chanting so that the chanting will be effective. So what we usually speak about, and what we will speak about, is this, the 10 offenses against the Holy Name, which causes the Holy Name to remove its benedictoriness, if there is such a word. So the first offense. One can deliver himself from the effect of all sins by surrendering himself to the Lord. Even if whatever what situation, if one gives oneself to Krishna, one can be free. But one can deliver himself in case one commits any offenses by the mercy of the Holy Name. One must continue to chant by taking shelter of the Holy Name. But if one commits an offense at the feet of the Holy Name, very difficult to protect oneself. I'm paraphrasing as I'm going along what Prabhupada said. So the first offense is to criticize the great devotees who have preached about the glories of the Lord. So they're distributing billions and billions to to everyone, satan nindam paramam aparadam vatanute, just to get into petty, nasty criticism. I see that sometimes when I'm not satisfied in my heart, criticize others. And how do I feel? I've watched this introspectively. What's the even the simple feeling that everyone can experience when you criticize others, that the heart feels very closed and nasty? And the opposite, when one's filled with love and affection and purity, the heart is very, very open and one is free. One feels free and so benedicted. So when that tendency to criticize is thrown at a great soul who has sacrificed everything, then the holy name who this great soul is serving tends to withdraw mercy. So we avoid that. Second, to see the holy names of the Lord in terms of worldly distinctions. Here's Prabhupada's explanation of that. The Lord is the proprietor of all the universes. What does proprietor mean? The owner, yes. And therefore, he may be known in different places by different names. But that does not in any way qualify the fullness of the Lord. Any name which is meant for the Supreme Lord is as holy as others because they are all meant for the Lord. So not that this name is the only name, and if you don't like that name, then, well, we won't get into politics. Such holy names are as powerful as the Lord, and there is no bar, no stopping for anyone in any part of the creation to chant and glorify the Lord by the particular name of the Lord as it is locally understood. Prabhupada so many times, especially in the early days, insisted that we are not trying to change people's religions. We want them to develop love for Krishna. We are trying to encourage that. So chant, if you have a name of the Lord that you love, then you chant the names of the Lord. And if you are not yet a lover of the Lord, you please chant Hare Krishna. And if you love Krishna anyway, you chant Hare Krishna and don't stop. All names of the Lord are all auspicious, and one should not distinguish such names of the Lord as if they were material. The third offense is to neglect the orders of the authorized acharyas or teachers or spiritual masters. The fourth offense is to vilify or criticize scriptures or Vedic knowledge. The fifth offense is to define the holy name of the Lord in terms of one's mundane calculation. This is what Prabhupada means. The holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord himself, and one should understand the holy name of the Lord to be none different from him. So one shouldn't think that ascribe any material limitation on the holy name. Abhina tam nama namano, Krishna and his Krishna, if he so desires, can be fully present in his holy name, and we can fully, continuously, and completely associate with him fully the Supreme Absolute Truth, who is Savakya, who is all-knowing, who is the creator of everything, who engages in most intimate pastimes in Vrindavan. We can fully gain access to him and continuously associate with him by chanting his holy name. We can be with him continuously. There are pastimes of stories of great devotees such as Raghunath Das Goswami, who he was the son of a zamindar. Zamindar is the way means jomidara, one who a landholder. So he was so wealthy, and then he gave that up. And when he gave it up, he took shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and ended up living in Vrindavan. And there in Vrindavan, He wasn't interested in eating. He wasn't interested in sleeping. He would just chant and chant and chant and chant and chant. And he was very thin because of his lack of interest in... He didn't go to the gym. He didn't do anything like that. He was just interested in chanting. And he was thin. And tears would be pouring from his eyes because of his... wanting to be with Krishna and being with Krishna, very interesting mixture of different stages of consciousness, of longing to be with Krishna and experiencing Krishna in that longing and in ecstasy, tears falling from his eyes like torrents of rain. So one person went to him, and knowing that he was from a wealthy family and seeing him so thin and crying, he assumed that he was crying because he was hungry. So he said, "But you don't have to cry. You can just go home again to your family. They'll take care of you. You'll be able to eat again. Don't worry." But Raghunath Das very gently told him, "Some people get their happiness by eating, and some people get their happiness by chanting Krishna's names. I prefer to stay here. Thank you." So Krishna can fully manifest himself in his holy names. But if we are a proper receptacle, if our consciousness is right, then Krishna can fully manifest himself and we can associate with him completely, continuously, if our consciousness is right. So we are trying to develop that kind of consciousness that causes Krishna to manifest himself fully to us as we chant. The seventh offense is to commit sins intentionally on the strength of the holy name. In the scriptures, it is said that one can be liberated from the effects of all sinful actions simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who takes advantage of this transcendental method and continues to commit sins on the expectation of neutralizing the effect of sins by chanting the name is an offender. Such an offender cannot purify himself by any recommended chanting of the holy name. But after taking shelter of the holy name and becoming immune, fixed, one should strictly restrain oneself from committing sinful acts with the hope that this his method of chanting will give him protection from the reactions. Very important. Amlo balad yasye papabudhi navidite yasye yamari sudhi. The eighth offense is to consider the holy name of the Lord and chanting to be equal to some material auspicious activity. So there are many auspicious or favorable activities that later on cause us to materially benefit. So the holy name is in a completely different category. The process and the results are on the spiritual platform. And one should not use the chanting of the holy name to gain material benefit. That's also an offense in there. The ninth offense is to instruct those who are not interested in chanting of the holy name, chanting the holy name, instruct them about chanting. So you see, most of Prabhupada's preaching was criticizing the material world and the hopelessness of material happiness. But there was a treasure within that he wanted to give everyone, that he did not directly always speak about it, because people go backwards in their spiritual life if they say, "Oh, I don't believe that. This is terrible. This is wrong." So there are things to be said on the other side, and Prabhupada does say some of those things in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's one of his purports. He explains that although the Bhagavad Gita is meant for devotees, actually, we still hold classes for non-devotees. Knowing the purpose of the Lord is to change their hearts. So the same thing can be said about chanting the holy name too. But that's a more intricate topic that we can speak about at some other time. The tenth offense is to become uninterested in the holy name of the Lord even after hearing of the transcendental nature of the holy name. In other words, the gift is so great and not become interested deeply in the gift. That is also an offense. And then there is an additional offense called pramada, which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur adds to this. And when the holy names are recited in a list, they usually said it is also offensive to be inattentive while chanting. And that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is the mother of all offenses. And I would just like to spend a few minutes talking about this, speaking about this one point. And there is such a tendency that I unfortunately have experienced myself to anything that you do every day tends to become mechanical. And anything that we do every day, when it becomes mechanical, we tend to take it for granted and not put our consciousness into it as we chant. We lose our intention. And by losing our intention that now this is my time to be with Krishna in the form of the holy names by chanting, by losing that intention, I lose my attention. Which means that while I sit down and chant, I'm thinking, well, how much more time, how many more rounds, how long do I have to control my mind, and I just let my mind just wander all over the universe and go over it. By the influence of passion, I'm thinking about the future. By the influence of ignorance, I'm thinking about the past. But in goodness, when the mind is peaceful and goodness, which is tends to be somewhat of a rare commodity in Kali Yuga, then one is present consciously while one chants. So I would like to suggest very strongly to all the devotees, and the good thing about giving a lecture at class is that you have to listen. You're the first person who has to hear what you're saying. But there's such a difference in the effect of chanting when you or when I am there consciously trying to be with Krishna as I chant in the form of his holy names, trying in simple terms to hear. There's such a difference in effect on the consciousness when I hear and when I don't hear, or even make the sincere attempt to be with Krishna in the form of the holy names by hearing. Just a sincere attempt. There's such a difference between, anyway, it's time now to chant. Etc., etc., etc. There's such a difference in the effect. One leaves the heart very unsatisfied, and the other fills the heart with, you could say, with clear consciousness, with light, and one's relationship with Krishna so easily blossoms with that. So easily blossoms. So I would like to humbly request everyone, but especially those who are taking initiation, to please take this point very seriously and try your best. Try your best. That means not necessarily you'll do it perfectly, but just try your best to sincerely be with Krishna when you sit down to chant the holy names every day. Think of it in terms of, now I don't have anything else to do. If I have something else to do, let me do it. But now when I sit down to chant, let me be there with Krishna in the form of his holy names. This is my chance. This is my chance to be with Krishna every day, to strive in this. And we have heard that Prabhupada had said, it was common knowledge in New Vrindavan, and I asked His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj about this. He said everyone knew it, that Prabhupada had said it,
80% of advancement comes from japa. That's what Prabhupada said, something like that. So take it very seriously. We all have our own lives, we have all have our own houses, we all have our own occupations and preoccupations and things on our mind, and we can't all gather together or live together because of circumstances and whatever. But this we take home with us. Us and our beads and the holy names. We have that, we take that home with us, and it is very private and it's very intimate, and no one can do it for you. So make that sankalpa and renew it regularly, because life tends to cause us to drift, and take it seriously. Be there with Krishna when you chant your japa. Try your best to chant 16 good rounds a day, and you'll move forward very rapidly. Avoid the offenses and associate with devotees. Read Srimad Bhagavatam. Serve the deities. Go to the holy land of Vrindavan or Mayapur, or make your house into a holy place, and chant Krishna's names seriously and attentively in kirtan and in japa. Okay, I'll stop here. You have been very tolerant listening to a relatively long talk. And I opened by saying I was going to be a short one, but what to do? Thank you. Okay, what do we do next?
The 12.
Okay, individually?
Yes.
So, how do you usually do the devotees come up individually and say the four rules?
Usually.
Okay, then let's do it like that. That's the usual way. But we'll do it with the difficulty is we have all the beads here in there. And we give the names this time. Okay. So let's see how it. I would like to have those who are married come up together, but it didn't work out that way because they're all together yet. But you're the first one that came up. And as fate has it, you're right here. Okay. So what you have to do, everyone, what they have to do, the system is that first we offer obeisances. And then I'll give you your beads and your name. And then I'll ask you, you know the four rules and you're about to chant 16 rounds a day, etc. And then give you the beads and your holy name, and then offer obeisances again. Got it? Did I explain it? Someone will explain it for me? Okay. First offer obeisances.
Okay.
And we should always offer obeisances so that we can be heard. That's also the system. Not to me, but to anyone. Okay. So what are the four rules?
No meat eating, no sex, no intoxication, and no gambling.
Okay. And you already know how to chant on the beats. When Prabhupada gave me the beats, he actually chanted on my beats right in front of me, so I felt they were like warm from his touch. Yeah. And then, but I've chanted in advance. So you know how to chant on the beats going from one side to the other. So, and I have to say your name, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Chanting 16 rounds a day. Try your best to chant attentively. And your name is Vraja Devi Dasi. Okay. Okay. Oh, quite amazing.
gentleman sitting next to you. Hello, please. What are the four rules, please?
No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling.
Okay, and please chant 16 rounds a day. You promise to do that. And try your best to chant to be there with Krishna. So your name, in one sense, it's obvious, but it would need a little explanation to make the more subtle parts of it come out. So I named you Ramdas. But there's so many Ramdases, but this one is Ramdas Abhiram Thakur. Now, here's a very interesting person. He was very, very powerful. He was an associate of Nityananda Prabhu. He's considered in the group of Nityananda Prabhu and also in the group of Mahaprabhu. And he was so powerful that when he would offer obeisances to even to a deity that wasn't installed properly, it would crack. Don't imitate. But he also had another characteristic that all materialistic people were very afraid of him. He was so powerful. And he had another characteristic. Sometimes it's described as a cane that he had, or sometimes he had or Prabhupada says it was a whip named Jai Mangal. And by the touch of his whip, someone would become in love with Krishna. So you have to become powerful, and you should preach fearlessly, and materialistic people should become afraid of you because of your strong teaching, and you should be happy in your Krishna consciousness and be very devoted to Nittai and Gaur and the land of Vrindavan, and here it is. Hare Krishna. Probably get the cane a lot of times in between. Where is Revati? Revati and the clan. Okay. Do you have both? Okay. Hare Krishna. Please, what are the four rules?
No meat eating, fish or egg, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling.
Okay. And you had a chant on your beat, so please, you chant 16 grams every day, 10 grams. Now, he comes.
Yes.
And your name is Nandalal. 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 Lala. The darling son. So gentle-hearted. Is it okay?
Yeah. home. I recognize these over here. This one we'll take first. This one doesn't have a little name on it. It fell off.
This one is Vivian's. Natalie's. Yes? Okay.
And yours are small also, yes?
Yeah. Okay. Natalie.
And Amy, why don't you come up, because your beads are right here too.
The ladies first. Where's Narottama? Who's going to carry Narottama a little closer? The children here are so nice, all of them, all different sizes. But who will hold him when you offer your business? Okay, yeah. Oh, yes, Rama. Yes, you have to be the official baby holder. The four rules, please.
No, cold meat, fish or eggs, no gambling, no intoxicates, and no illicit sex.
The beets, the same 16 hours a day without fail. And Hare Krishna, attentively so. Try your best. Yes. The attempt, the sincerity of the attempt, practically speaking, is Krishna sees that and accepts it as success in of itself. Okay. So now, your name is Nama Priya. And when some of the devotees on their beads, they don't have the string on the largest end of the beads, because the beads usually go from larger to smaller. After the eighth bead, there should be a small string. This is the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. So some of you don't have that, so you can put that on. So you promised this. Okay. So there's Nama Priya, and your name is Haridas Das. And to do all the services Krishna wants of you, you have to be humble and tolerant, like Haridas, and take shelter of the holy name. And wonderful service that Krishna has been doing from time to time to Hare Krishna. See if we can do it. Yeah, you can do it. Raj, you can come up also.
No, that's no good.
100%. 100%. Good. And 16 rounds a day, and really try, really focus. It's the most healthy thing one can do for one's consciousness and developing love for Krishna. The most healthiest thing one can do is really focus on the chanting. Put your effort into everyone. Put your effort into chanting quality rounds, and it's so elevating. So, promise to chant 16 rounds every day. And your name is Chitra Gopi. And 16 rounds. And really try your best to attentively chant, to be there with Krishna and the holy names. It's such an opportunity. Yes. Okay, your name is Raghunath Das. Everyone close your eyes. I've got to look at the list. First, the name of the first initial of the legal name, but we didn't do very well, except for a few in that regard. Please, the foremost, please. And I have to say some pranamas out loud. The foremost, please.
No meeting.
No meeting. And 16 rounds a day. And try your best to make it the rounds very attentive. And I think you have to add a little string on. No, you have your string. Very good. So your name is Manjari Vinidasi. Despite the pressures of busy life, etc., please try to be there with Krishna when you're chanting. Keep going back to that. And I will also give a little explanation about your name too. But first I'll say it. Your name is Yadupati. This is a name that's that means the protector or the lord of the Yadus. So it's a name of Krishna. But it also is a name that in very deep separation from Krishna, the gopis called. So it came from the lotus mouth of the gopis, too. So it's a very sweet name. Huh? Wow. Good scene. This is the first time I've seen him during this visit. Wow. Very auspicious. Bless our gathering.
Yeah.
And last, but certainly not least. Please, you come up too. I know. And the rest of the clan can come up also. One, two, three. We could do it with musical accompaniment, but we won't. So please be photos.
No meeting fish or eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, and no illicit sex.
And you have the smallest, most humblest beads. And I was thinking that if don't squeeze them too hard, because they might break. But be very gentle with them and take good care of them. I lost the beads that Prabhupada gave me when I was in Hong Kong many years ago. I was distributing books and someone stole the bag that they were in. But make sure you keep them very, very carefully with them, everyone. And I think you have to add a string to one that after they feed. And your name is Vrinda Devi Das. We have a Vrinda Devi Das and a Vrinda Devi Das and so many gopis. Gopi assistants. Vrinda is very good at engaging the gopi assistants. Okay. And thank you all very much for blessing this occasion with your presence, and please offer some prayers for all the devotees, because the blessings of the Vaishnavas, the devotees are very, very powerful. We don't underestimate the well wishes, the potency of the well wishes and the prayerful benedictions of the devotees. I think there's no more. Hare Krishna. So, what do we do now, Samananda Prabhu?
Go on.
The second initiate. We have one, two. So please come to my room this afternoon and I'll intone the mantra for you, and we'll make sure that His Holiness, His Divine Grace, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is there also, so His blessings are clearly present. for that. Well, anyway, his blessings are present as well as so many Vaishnava acharyas, but I always feel so connected to him. Okay, let the sacrifice begin. Is that wood from?
From the forest.
From the forest wood. Someone had tulsi wood.
Yes.
Where is the tulsi wood?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes it look. Fire comes because they're auspicious too. Why don't you start it with the tulsi wood? Is that okay, tulsi? Devi Dasi? And you have to, and you both have to evoke the presence of His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj too. I'm sure he is very happy. And any other exalted Vaishnavas that you have in your minds, please evoke their presence. Yes. Oh, nice. And the Dayananda Maharaj. And who else? Kavi Chandra Maharaj too? Yes, it is. And his disciples here. We just ask for everyone's blessings. That's all we want. We just want blessings.
I need to hold water. It says also for you. On the right side, and I recite the mantra, and then we have to put it on the floor.
Yes.
So, if you mind, let me. And I give the mantra verse. Om Sat Sat Shri Govindo 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 Asyam Subhatitao Achyuta Gotra Shyamananda Dasa Shri Krishna Priyatam Upanayanam Samskara Karmaham Karishyami. Sa Sanat Kumaro Vatukama Deva Taya Shirsamam Pati Deva Helana Devashivaya Purusha Chanantara Kurmo Harirmam Nirayada Shesha. Nanto, Om Prajapati Vishnu Rishi Vrishna
Krishna
Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna Krishna
Krishna.
So the neck beads have to be put on. Which they should be put on you. Vasubandhavi, they should be put on you. Madhurya Leela. Yamuna. Gunavatar, let someone else sing. Put the neck beads on. Alokika.
Om Samud Bhavanam Agne Yagacha Agne Vam Samud Bhavanam Asi.
Prabhupada told me the neck beats were like a dog collar. And the dog has good quality of being faithful to his master.
Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami.
Okay, that's my stuff. We'll have a couple more. One more. Thank you.
Everyone says,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
And then very gently, underhanded, onto the fire when it's time. Where were you? Hiding. You sit there.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
After every swaha.
Swaha.
Namaste.
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 Saraswati Deva Gaurabani Chari Hare Chari Hare Chari
Hare Krishna.